Blog Talk Radio.
Woo!
Wouldn't you prefer a good game of chess?
Let's play an episode of the King for a Day Fantasy Football Podcast.
How about a nice game of chess?
No, Joshua. No chess. King for a Day Fantasy Football. Joshua? Like we blew Joshua's mind. It's enough to blow your mind. It's our own version of War Games. 24 owners, 12 games, 6 divisions, 2 conference champions, and 1 king. It's time for another episode of the podcast that's changing the way ladies look at men. Never said for the good, but it is changing. It's the King for a Day Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host and the commissioner of the King for a Day Fantasy Football League, Rick Goreski. It's time for our weekly review and preview show. We're going to wrap up week 2 and turn our sights to week 3. Pardon me, everybody. Lots of action to recap today. Let's start with league-wide information here. Week 2 was filled with games that went down to the wire. 2 games ended in a tie, only to be overturned by scoring changes. Very rare for 2 games in the same week to be overturned by, rare for 2 games to be tied at the end of a week, much less then both be overturned by scoring changes. Average score for week 2, 84.167 points. That was up about 3.5 points from week 1's average of 80.542 points per game for each team. 7 teams this week hit the century mark, 3 from the Gothic, 4 from the Renaissance Conference. After 2 weeks, the Renaissance Conference leads the Battle of the Benjamins, with 7 teams from the Renaissance hitting the century mark to the Gothic's 5. High score this week, week 2, was 112 from the Kenosha Commandos, Andy Wellman's Kenosha Commandos over in the Renaissance Conference. Other 100-point efforts, there was 100 from Legion of Doom, 107 from the Muskego Raiders. Damn Mosquito Raiders. Swat them! Mark beat me in the Mango Bowl, if you can't tell. 103 from the Old Helm Ogres and the Gothic as well. In the Renaissance, it was the Typhoons, 111, lost in the sauce, 107, and the Phantoms at 106, joining the aforementioned Kenosha Commandos. Honorable mention of the Beerman Brawlers, who came in at 94. I think 90s are probably something worthy of mentioning in many weeks. Last but not least, let's review the reason why I keep my day job. I went 2-4 in my predictions in both the Gothic and the Renaissance Conference. That makes me 4-8 for week 2. Not exactly going to Vegas anytime soon. Let's get recapping. Let me say that week 2, I do want to say out loud, too, that I tried to put together, I'm going to try to do this all in one show. I'm not 100% sure if I can get this in or not. Just ran out of time this week to be able to do what I wanted to do, which was to split this into 2 shows. It just takes a lot of time to write these. So sorry, I'm going to try to get it all in one show. If I don't, I'll have to run a second show. But as I begin this right now, my goal is to try to get through the recaps and the previews all in one show. Week two was completely the opposite. Over, let's see, in the Gothic Conference, week two was completely the opposite of week one. Week one saw half, by and large, half the games were close. This week, five out of six games ended in double-digit margins. There was one game. Initially, it was a tie, only to get overturned on a scoring change. So let's jump in. By the numbers, that makes half the games decided by 8 points or less. That was last week in the Gothic Conference. This week, again, five out of six, double-digit margins of victory. The game of the week, let's start there. After further review, the Muskego Raiders squeaked by the Old Helm Ogres by an incredibly high score of 107 to 103. I mean, if any of us, if I told you you were going to score 100-plus points this week, right now, going into week three, wouldn't you feel like you had a victory? I mean, man, does that sting when you put up 100-plus and then your opponent does the same. To say this game went down to the wire would be an understatement. As the final gun went off after Monday night's game between the Jets and the Colts, both of these teams were tied at 103 points. It wasn't until Thursday when stat corrections were unveiled that the Muskego Raiders, courtesy of a scoring change involving defensive back James Iadigbo, got the win. For Mark Kellett's Muskego Raiders, they couldn't have picked a better week to blow up because they not only take out the Ogres, but also the Gators, winning the 2015 Mango Bowl. The Raiders could do little wrong in this game as they placed four players in double digits, led by Ben Roethlisberger's 25 points, D'Angelo Williams kicking in 18 points. I guess starting Williams over Gore was the right call there, as Gore got negative two. 12 points from Dunlop of Cincinnati and 13 points from the player of the game, Iadigbo. The scary thing about the Raiders here is that they got zero out of Marshawn Lynch and DeAndre Hopkins and negative two out of Keenan Allen. They put up 107 points and they didn't even get a contribution from three of their heavy offensive hitters. That's amazing. The Raiders are certainly living up to their name this year, and they're not going away, people. That team's really good. For the Old Helm Ogres, Brian Koch has to be kicking himself, as any of four different starting lineup decisions could have won this game for him in week two. Having lost by 4 points, the Ogres left the following on their bench. Cam Newton, 19 points, that's 9 points higher than starter Matt Stafford. Sammy Watkins put up a six-pack while Mike Evans got blanked. Donald Butler put up 10 points on the bench, while starters Perry Riley and Christian Jones each put up two. And last but not least, Kenny Vaccaro put up 10 points on the bench, while starter Denoris Searcy tossed in 2 points. Heartbreaking way to lose a game, and it's even worse knowing that Brian had points on the bench at, you know, one little decision, which I'm sure he pored over all the different thoughts. Just one going the different way would have made the difference. All is not bad, though, as the Ogres, they actually had five players score 10 points or more, including a breakout performance from Larry Fitzgerald, 24 points to lead the team. Best Ball actually had the Ogres winning this game, 140 to 126. Next up, breakup D-Risk. D-Risk's league record losing streak is over. Dave Korducki, who had a miserable stretch where he didn't win a game since 2013, finally got off the snide with a victory over the Wolfpack by a score of 86-56, blowout too. For D-Risk, the 86 points they put up were the most since Week 9 of 2014. D-Risk was led by Peyton Manning, 16 points and 12 points apiece from Deontay Hightower and Curtis Lofton. For Wolfpack, the bad luck continues. I said nobody should want to play D-Risk, and I was right on that one. Wolfpack in the first week puts up 100-plus, ends up getting buzzed by Kenny's Hurricanes. Now he goes into week two, faces D-Risk on the big losing streak. D-Risk blows up. Wolfpack loses Drew Brees in the process. Just bad luck to start the season. The odds were just getting higher and higher that D-Risk would get a win, and unfortunately for Brian Getter, they got caught holding the bag on that one. One player, defensive lineman Chandler Jones, put 16 on the board. He's the only player Wolfpack put over 10 points this week. Just a forgettable week for Wolfpack. Devarrell Bowman, I mean, he may as well have been inactive when he finishes with a mere 4 assists in a game where Pittsburgh scores 43 points. Just terrible. Best Ball had D-Risk winning this one 100-89. Another matchup that was much more exciting than the final score says was Damage Inc. versus Pale Riders. While the score showed a 10-point win for Damage Inc., 78-68, the actual game itself was a barn burner if you were keeping track on the website. This matchup was neck and neck with several lead changes taking place and went down to the Monday night football game where Andrew Luck had one of his worst games as a pro. Pale was up before Damage tied the game heading into Monday night football. Luck puts up at one point negative 5 points with all the turnovers for the night. Negative 5 points at one point. Pale Riders are ahead. Then Luck throws a touchdown, pushes Damage back in front. Then Luck tosses another pick, and the lead goes down to like 3 points, you know, with 4.5 minutes to go. It was just going down to the wire. At the end, it was Damage getting just enough points from all their players because they had some guys going on defense to make it look comfortable in a game that was anything but that. Travis Elkenberg's team put 4 players in double digits. 15 points from place kicker Justin Tucker sure helped. 11 apiece from Alec Ogletree and DeQuell Jackson, who played on Monday night, and 10 points from Jerry Hughes. On the flip side, Pale Riders had a very disappointing game as they put 1 player in double digits. That's Jelani Jenkins, had 12 points. And they saw several players that were expected to make contributions just look terrible. Despite all the bad breaks, Tom Buckles easily could have won this game had he chosen to start Ryan Shazier. That's 23 points from Shazier on the bench. Ouch. Tough loss for the Pale Riders as they had Luke Kuechly on the bench with a concussion, Jeremy Hill playing for the opposite team apparently, 2 fumbles, negative 4 points, C.J. Anderson still injured, pointless. I mean, just kind of a rough luck, forgettable, just one of those days where it's like, damn it, missed opportunities and bad play from some of the key players hurt Pale Riders. Best Ball had Damage Inc. winning 106-96. Moving on, Kurt Kujawa's Legion of Doom fends off a stiff challenge from Curtis Thrasher's Made Men by a final score of 100-86. Legion of Doom continues to look the part of the favorite as they hit the century mark despite only putting 3 players in double digits. LOD was led by Carson Palmer's 22, Antonio Brown's 17 points, and Telvin Smith had 10. Kujawa's team had points to spare, too, with Allen Robinson 18 points on the bench. For the Made Men, the other Kurt Thrasher, this match came down to the starting quarterback position where starter Tony Romo had a miserable negative 2 points in that pathetic game against Philadelphia. Meanwhile, the backup quarterback, Andy Dalton, puts up 18. That's a 20-point turnaround. If you take your shoes and socks off, boys, and do the math, you can see that Made Men could have won this thing if they'd have started Dalton. Best Ball did have Legion of Doom winning 126-115. Next up, the Hurricanes take out Make It Rain by a final score of 89-74. Only 6 players scoring more than 5 points. 6 players scored more than 5 points for Ken Banier's team, yet they pick up the win. They didn't wow anyone this week, but they get another win and move to 2-0 on the season, and that's as big as it gets. It's the biggest stat of all, right? Hurricanes were led by a trio of players that got over half their points in week 2. Tom Brady, 20 points to go along with 16 points from Sean Lee and 10 from Eric Weddle. For Pete Tarantino's squad, 27 points from their defense. I mean, there's nothing they could have done to win this game, to change the outcome of this game. If you looked at all the different things that could have happened, Best Ball score had the Hurricanes winning 113-81. So Kenny put up 89 in this game. If Pete had a crystal ball and put every right decision he could in there, he still only got 81. So, again, another forgettable week for another owner here. In the final matchup of the Gothic for Week 2, 4U2NV beat the A-team by a score of 89-75. Borkowski's team had 4 players hit double digits, led by Julian Edelman with 15, Russell Wilson 13, Beckham Jr. 12, and Malcolm Jenkins with 10. 4U2NV did leave some meat on the bone, too, in this one, with Carlos Dansby and Rashad Jones each on the bench with 11 points. While Bork's squad put up a solid score, Scott Phillips' team kind of gave the store away with four players in the lineup with goose eggs, including Cyprin, who didn't even play. A-team had one player, Ryan Tannehill, scored double digits with 15. On the bench, A-team had 16 points from Matt Jones, as well as 6 points from Doug Baldwin, and 9 points from Derek Morgan. So starting lineup changes could have made a difference in this one. Best Ball actually had the A-team winning 113-107. But at the end of the day, 4U2NV takes the win, A-team takes a loss. That's it for the Gothic review. Let's move over to the Renaissance Conference, where the story continued to be the haves and the haves not have-nots. Only two close games and then four blowouts. Game of the week in the Renaissance, Tim Savoras lost, and the Sauce squad won an improbable 107-106 victory over Mike Thomas's Phantoms, the Tough Luck Phantoms, we should call them this year. After losing Lacey for all of Sunday Night Football, Lost was down 9 points heading into Monday Night Football. Lost had Brandon Marshall as their only hope to get back into this game. Marshall in the game, 5 catches for 75 yards at the end of the third quarter. So here we are, 5 catches, 74 yards. He needs 100 yards and a touchdown in order to tie. Marshall gets the touchdown and his 100 yards with 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter. With the game now tied at 106, boom, final gun goes off and the game is over. This game's a tie. But then, after further review, Thursday stat changes come along. Lost in the Sauce picks up an extra point. Harrison Smith was awarded a tackle, which broke the tie. Lost led by 22 points from Carson Palmer, 15 apiece from Justin Tucker and Julian Edelman, and 10 points from Bobby Wagner. For the Phantoms, 21 points from Jamie Collins almost helped pull off the victory, but alas, it was 1 point too shy. Phantoms put 3 players at 10 points or more, 16 from Peyton Manning, 12 from Jelani Jenkins, and Collins is 21. If our resident Bear fan could point the finger at any one player for the loss, it would be a Green Bay Packer, because Clay Matthews put up one single point. Mike did start Olsen, Greg Olsen, who got 3 points, instead of Tyler Eifert, who got 9 points, so that, you know, played large in the outcome here, the decision to do that, but, I mean, Olsen's really good, so I don't know if I can really, I don't know how many of us would have started Eifert over Olsen is what I think what I'm trying to say. So technically the points were there, but it's not really realistic to beat him up on that one. Best Ball had Lost winning 129-124. Very high scoring game. Another game that was exciting to watch. The Kenosha Commandos defeated the Bierman's Brawlers by a score of 112-94. While the 18-point win seems like a blowout, this game actually was a Bierman lead heading into Monday Night Football, if you can believe that. When the Colts and Jets game ended, Gar Nelson's Bierman's Brawlers lost a point with Andrew Luck, while Andy Wellman's Commandos scored 19 to give you that, you know, 18-point victory. For the winning Kenosha Commandos, whose 112 points were a league high this week, Eric Decker put up 9 points in the Monday Nighter. Muhammad Wilkerson and David Harris, same Monday night game, chipped in with 10 points. Overall, 4 players ended up in double-digit points for the Commandos, led by the resurgent Larry Fitzgerald's 24 points, Preston Brown's 14 points, Aya Digbo 13 points, and Calvin Johnson 10. For the Bierman's Brawlers, an amazing 5 players scored 10 points or more, including 15 from Emmanuel Sanders, 14 from Chandler Jones, 13 from Justin Houston, 11 from Rashad Jones, and 10 from Malcolm Jenkins. Killer stat for the Brawlers was goose eggs from Justin Forsett, Jimmy Graham, and Rashad Jennings. I guess, you know, negative one from Andrew Luck is the key stat, the ultimate killer stat, because if Luck gets it rolling, this is potentially a different game. I mean, if Gar had started Andy Dalton and Dalton's 18 points that were on the bench instead of Andrew Luck's negative one, they would have won the game. But let's be honest, who would have done that? Who would have started Dalton over Luck? I think, again, Bierman leading into Monday Night Football with Andrew Luck, Most guys would take a lead in Andrew Luck heading into the final game of the week. So it just didn't work out this week for Bierman as the tough Commandos team pulls it out. Best ball score had the Commandos winning 142-128. Next up, Bill Novak's Dirty Hippies nip Kyle Koch's Irishman by less than a touchdown at 75-70. The Hippies didn't do much this week, but they did enough. They did what they had to do to get by. Three players hit double digits this game. Just didn't meet my expectations when I predicted that the Hippies would score the most points in the league in week two. The culprit, if there is such a thing in a victory, was three goose eggs by offensive flex guys Lamar Miller, Joseph Randall, and Marcus Wheaton. That was for the Hippies. With that said, you do have to give Bill credit because he really only made one true lineup mistake, starting Martellus Bennett 3 points over Eric Ebron's 9 points. And, you know, it's a mistake, I say that loosely. I just mean if you're examining in hindsight, you know, what happened versus what he could have done, he really only left 6 points on the bench that way. Everything else was very, very minor. Low-scoring win, but Bill earned it by flipping all the right switches. Led by Ryan Shazier's 23 points, the Irishman nearly pulled off the upset. But alas, Shazier would only, he's their only 10-point player this week, and that just wasn't enough on this day. Pardon me. While I could talk about Kyle having Donald Butler's 10 points on the bench or Clinton Dix's 7 points on the bench while Patrick Chung got 2 points, I'd rather talk about Irish's team pick on the website because, you know, I got to ask Kyle where the hell he got that one of these days. First off, what dexterity by that young lady. That's talent right there, let me tell you. Second, what the hell is that? Is it a pole? Is she backed up against a pole? It looks like a band baton. It looks like, you know, like the people that are leading the band and the girls swinging the baton around at the front of the parade. I mean, maybe there was a parade and there was a horrible accident or the band was playing at the local football game and things went wrong. I mean, next thing you know, she's got a pole in the ass. Anyway, Hippies win. Kyle gets best ass with a pole picture award. Best ball had the Hippies 91, Irish 85. In another low-scoring game that I personally thought that was going to have more scoring, Chris Koch's Champions of Chaos knocked out Brian Fram's Gracie's Got Game by a score of 69-58. There's really not a lot to talk about in this one. The Champs put 3 players in double digits, while Gracie only had 1. Champs were led by their place kicker, Mason Crosby, 13 points, and then 10 apiece from Matthew Stafford and Lawrence Timmons. With Cyprin injured, Chris is getting killed at defensive back. She better hope Cyprin comes back soon because, you know, that or it's time to start hitting free agency. On the other side, Gracie could have started Tom Brady in his 20 points instead of Phil Rivers' 8 points. That alone would have given Gracie the win. But even then, it would have only scored 70 points total, so the entire roster underperformed. Now, the killer for Frams was Jeremy Hill getting -4 and then -2 from Keenan Allen. I mean, say goodnight, Gracie. Best ball score had Gracie 98-90 winning this matchup. Moving on to the week's biggest blowout, where Steve Wellman's Meat Puppets put a 43-point whooping on Corey Manvilla's Saiyans. Final score was Meat Puppets 86, Saiyans 43. The Meat Puppets put 5 players in double digits, led by 14 from Aaron Rodgers, who, believe it or not, was not the highest-scoring quarterback for the Meat Puppets in Week 2. No, that would be David Carr, 19 points on the bench. The Puppets got 12 from the surprising start of Arizona's David Johnson. Let's say, how many of us would have pulled the handle on that slot machine last week? Kudos to Steve on that one because... man, that took some balls to start David Johnson. 11 apiece from Alec Ogletree and Devon Kennard, and 10 from Jerry Hughes for Steve. Steve's defense matched Saiyan's entire team, 43 points apiece. So you just take Steve's defense, that came out to 43 points, which is what Saiyan's put up for the game. For Corey's Saiyan's, you can rest assured they aren't this bad. It was just a bad week. Saiyans were led by DeQuell Jackson's 11 points. Some bright spots, albeit not for this week, but for the future. For Corey, Deion Lewis of the Patriots on his bench had 10 points. Giovanni Bernard getting some extra carries, put up 6 points. Drew Brees did go down with an injury, so again, that added to the insult to injury. I added the injury to the insult, I guess I should say. Brees going down with the injury, but Saints have Ryan Tannehill on the bench, so that's not such a bad thing to have. Maybe when everything is said and done, maybe that's going to be the better way to go. Tannehill in week two put up 15 points to Breeze's 4 points in week two, so that's an 11-point swing just in week two. Best ball scorer had the Meat Puppets winning 102-79. Last game of the Renaissance for week two, my very own Gators, who were taking on Tyler Banier's Typhoons. If the Meat Puppets made a nice pair of boots out of the Gators last week, then I think it's safe to say that the Typhoons made an ashtray out of the Gators this week. I want to credit Steve Wellman for coming up with that line. Nice job there, Steve. Speaking of nice jobs, the Typhoons only had 4 players hit the 10-point mark, but boy, what a 4 players they were, man. How'd you like to play against this? The sum total of Roethlisberger, 25 points. Antonio Brown, 17 points. Steven Gostkowski, 16 points, and Sean Lee, 16 points. That's 74 points total from 4 players. Tyler almost beat me just with those 4 players. Each one blew up beyond expectation, but still. For my Gators, it's been a rough first 2 weeks to start the season. Dante Moncrief did help out with 12 points and what turned out to be the only player on the team that scored 10 points or more. Just an ugly performance for the Gators, but it was better than week one. I mean, you got to look at the positive, right? Best ball scorer had the Typhoons 130, Gators 105. So that does it for the game recaps. Let's take a look at the high teams and players for the week. I like to review this. The top 5 fantasy teams this week: Kenosha Commandos 112, Typhoons 111, Muskego Raiders 107, Lost in the Sauce 107, Phantoms 106, and then, of course, the Oldham Ogres had 103. Top 5 quarterbacks this week: Roethlisberger 25 points, Carson Palmer 22, Tyrod Taylor 21, Tom Brady 20, and Cam Newton 19. Top 5 running backs this week scores were D'Angelo Williams, 18, Matt Jones, 16, David Johnson, 12, Deion Lewis, 10, and Jamal Charles and several others tied at 9. Top wide receivers this week, of course, Larry Fitzgerald, 24 points, leads the way. Travis Benjamin, 21 points from Cleveland. Nobody had Travis Benjamin. He's a free agent or was a free agent. Allen Robinson, 18 points. Antonio Brown, 17. Julian Edelman, 15. Top tight ends this week, 15 from Crockett Gilmore, 9 from Rob Gronkowski, 9 Tyler Eifert, Ebron, Fasano, many guys tied at 9. Kickers, 16 points from Gostkowski, 15 points Justin Tucker, 14 Brinza, the kicker for Tampa Bay, 13 from Crosby and Janikowski. Defensive linemen, Jock Smith, Tampa Bay, and Armonte Bryant, each 16 points, led the way. Chandler Jones, 14 points. Carlos Dunlop, 12. Robert Ayers, 10. Top 5 linebackers this week: Shazier, 23 points. Jamie Collins, 21. Sean Lee, 16. Preston Brown, 14. Justin Houston, 13. Top 5 defensive backs: Tony Jefferson, 18. Marcus Peters, 17. Aya Digbo, 13. Antoine Blake, 12, and Corey Graham, 12 as well. That was week two. Let's get out the darts and start predicting week three, guys. What I want to do here in the predictions portion of the podcast is to simply take the average points. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to take the average points per player because, you know, when you go to reports and you look at top players, there's an average points per game for each player. My goal was to take that, add up everybody's average points per player in each lineup, and then be able to predict a winner. Unfortunately, the website doesn't give me this information. And despite my asking them to provide me, because the info is there, just kind of a behind-the-scenes link to run that report, which I know from what I do for a living they could easily do, they won't do it. And I just can't get to an easy spot to compile the numbers without hours of work. So we're just not going to have those types of prediction shows very often where I tell you how many points the average lineup would have. I just can't afford to take the time to do that, and it's why we're taking the poll that we are as a league. At some point, if this website doesn't step up and give us what we need, we just have to look elsewhere. I don't think many of us want to change, but we just have to look at it. When all the other sites that are out there can do things like quarterback hits and tackles for a loss, and, you know, they can apply blocked kicks for offensive players, but this site seemingly can't. It's always like pulling teeth, and their customer service isn't that friendly. Like I said, guys, just to give you a little hint as to why we did that poll, we maybe will look elsewhere in the offseason if these guys don't get their act together this year. But let's get to it, starting with the Gothic Conference. The whole thing is over there is another conversation for another day, next year's rules meeting and so on. Let's talk about predictions. Gothic Conference had one trade today, by the way, to speak of on Saturday. Two of the preseason favorites in the Gothic made a deal. Legion of Doom lets Matt Ryan, David Johnson, James Jones. What is this? What am I writing here? Legion of Doom sent the following players to Wolfpack. Let me just reset this. Matt Ryan, David Johnson, James Jones, Danny Trevathan. They get back from the Wolfpack David Carr, Matt Forte, Torrey Smith, Key Meese from Miami. Remember that Wolfpack left the draft with both Matt Forte and Austin Jeffrey, so he had to shed one of those guys, though. You can't have two Bears in your lineup. Maybe Mike Thomas can, but it's just even two guys, even I kind of tap guys that have two Colts on their offense, and that should be one of the most potent offenses this year. It's just a lot of eggs in one basket in that respect if you have two major pieces. Plus, Wolfpack had Drew Brees as their starter, and they really needed some protection due to the Brees injury. For Legion of Doom, they get the biggest player in the deal, Matt Forte. Not sure about this week, but Forte will certainly get his points as the season goes on. Looking at the predictions, for Week 3 games, Damage Inc. is facing off against 4U2 and V. Looking things over, Damage has Niall Davis in his lineup still. He's got Dwayne Allen in there. Allen is already listed as not expected to play, so hopefully Damage will make a move there. No fee for starting an injured player unless that player is on IR or the PUP list or a suspension. You get the drift. No monetary fee, but there certainly is a penalty as you're playing one short, and the goal is to win. As Herm Edwards would say, you play to win the game. I do love the Luck versus Tennessee matchup. I think Andrew Luck and the Colts lay some points on the board this week. For 4U2 NV, he does have Russell Wilson in a game where Seattle should demolish the Bears. That's a great matchup. Brandon Marshall against Philly is a good matchup. Edelman against the Jaguars is an easy matchup for 4U2 NV. Beckham Jr. already has 6 points on the board, courtesy of Thursday night. I'm going to take 4U2 NV to win this one. His having a 24-point lead to start has nothing to do with it this time. This isn't a coward pick. I like his matchups better. Next up, Make It Rain going up against Wolfpack. Wolfpack finally gets Le'Veon Bell back from suspension this week. Foles is in at quarterback as I write this. Not sure if Wolfpack has had the opportunity since the trade to acquire Matt Ryan to make a move, but Foles has a good matchup if he ultimately does play him. I'm not a big fan of Carlos Hyde this year, regardless who he's playing. Marvin Jones is intriguing. And actually, looking at the lineup here, Wolf is actually one short at O-Flex, so I'm not sure what he's doing there. Looks like maybe Wolf would play James Jones, probably, I'm guessing. For Make It Rain, he's got Aaron Rodgers, who I think is going to toss at least a couple of touchdowns in this matchup. But, you know, the rest of the matchups aren't that great. Calvin against Denver could be good. Calvin Johnson, not a big Percy Harvin fan. The best matchup is Graham against Chicago, but are they going to use him? You know, I mean, Jimmy Graham is rumored to be just ticked off at the way he's being used in Seattle, and I don't blame him. But then again, you know, it's just a weird move. You know, you trade your top center, part of this cohesive offensive line that has brought you so much success through the running game, for a guy who's a pass-catching tight end on a high-octane offense, two targets against the Packers last week for Jimmy Graham. That's it. Anyway, tossing a bad Thursday night performance, and looking at my notes, I don't think I made a prediction on this one. I'm going to pick Wolfpack to win this one. Moving on. 2-0-2 teams, the Made Men and Old Helm Ogres, face off in a contest where both teams are desperate for a win. Looking at the matchups, Made Men are hurting. gone is Tony Romo. Julius Thomas not back yet. DeMarco Murray banged up and possibly not going to play. Hill fumbled twice in a row last week. Now Bernard is rumored to be in line for more touches. Just a really rough spot for made men. They've got to weather this. They've got to stop the bleeding. Same can be said for the Ogres, who actually have some good matchups this week. He's got to stop the bleeding. He's got Cam Newton against the New Orleans team without Drew Brees. Demaryius Thomas against Detroit. Fitzgerald against San Francisco. On defense, Preston Brown against Miami could be a good matchup. Bobby Wagner against Chicago. Clausen's the quarterback, so Bobby Wagner against Chicago is good stuff. Clausen should throw a lot of short stuff, which is going to allow Wagner to be around the ball. And speaking of Chicago, Christian Jones is up against the angry Seahawks. Could be a boost for him. I'm going to go with the Ogres in this one. Next, Pale Riders taking on A-Team in our next matchup. A share of first place is up for grabs in this Silver Division matchup. All teams are 1-1 in the Silver. Ouch. I confirmed here that Keekly is out again this week. So, tough break for the Pale Riders, who otherwise have a great set of defensive matchups here. I know Levante David's up against Houston, Aaron Donald against Pittsburgh, Jenkins is up against Buffalo. Offensively, Pale, you know, once again going with Mariota at quarterback. Tennessee facing off, facing Indy in what I think isn't a bad matchup for Tennessee. I think they'll be able to throw it around a little bit. Best offensive matchup is C.J. Anderson against Detroit. It could be a good game for Anderson. I mean, if you think about it, Anderson hurt his toe in week one. So you can think maybe that's part of why his performance in week one wasn't that great. But then the Broncos had to turn around and play on Thursday night in week two. So the guy is injured, and he's got 3 days in between games to rest. And then he's back on the field again. He looked horrible in week one and week two, but now he's had 10 days to heal in between games. And I think he could have a bounce-back game. Over to the A-team. Tannehill against Buffalo is terrible. It's just a bad matchup. Charles against Green Bay is good. You know, you got Randall against Atlanta. All the Cowboys have left is their offensive line and running game. Jones against Detroit is a good matchup. Julio Jones. I don't like the Cooks against Carolina without Drew Brees matchup. Defensive matchups are great for the A-team. That kind of gives them the edge. I'll take A-team to win this one. He has Cameron Jordan against the Panthers. He's got Thomas Davis against New Orleans. Derek Johnson against the Packers. Poslowski against New England. He needs to get Cypern out of his lineup. But other than that, Scott's looking pretty good in this one. And I do have to beg your pardon. I am going to have to mute this for a moment and blow my nose, everybody. Sorry, one moment. Thank you. Sorry for the dead air. Let's move on to, that was Scott Phillips is my pick, the A-team. Let's move on to the Hurricanes and D-Risk. Man, I was holding that. I had to blow my nose for like 20 minutes here. On to the Hurricanes and D-Risk. I tell you, I just can't warm up to Kenny's team. He's 2-0, and I recognize the power of Brady and Gronkowski. But I just see so many little things that turn me off when I look at his team. He's got Brady and Gronk. And now he's got Lewis in there, too. So now you got three Patriots. And granted, yes, they're a high-scoring and good team. But, again, you get into too many eggs in one basket. You're just in danger of that. So, number two, he's got two wide receivers from Indy, and they're in Hilton and Moncrief. If one does well, I think the other one's probably not going to do well. John Brown is good, but you don't know who's going to get the ball in Arizona. I mean, there's three guys down there that could, in any given day, could get the ball. I mean, last week it was Fitzgerald. Is it going to be Michael Floyd this week? It could be Brown, but who knows? It's so inconsistent. And then you got Gronk, Brady, Lewis. Those three guys, again, to get back to matchups, Gronk, Brady, and Lewis against the Jaguars, they'll get their points, but that game can be over by halftime, and it could become the LeGarrette Blount show. Ken's going two defensive line this week for his defense, which is interesting. Little things that I just normally wouldn't do kind of turn me off from that squad. For D-Risk, fresh off a big win to break their losing streak, Dave has Peyton Manning up against Detroit in a good matchup. Kelsey against Green Bay is a good matchup. Watt against anything is a good matchup. I'm pretty sure you could put him in as a pinch hitter in the baseball playoffs, and he'll probably hit a home run. Harris, Lofton, and Hightower have good matchups, and T.J. McDonald should possibly have his best week of the season as the Rams take on Pittsburgh and Pittsburgh's wild passing offense. So I'm going to take D-Risk to win this one in an upset. Last but not least, in the Gothic, I think this is going to be the game of the week. The immovable object, that is the Muskego Raiders, meets the unstoppable force, that is the Legion of Doom. This is a clash of the Titans here. Both of these teams have come out of the gate fast and are 2-0. Looking at the matchups, Legion of Doom has a nice game set up with Palmer against San Francisco, Forte against Seattle. Forte against Seattle could be bad. It could turn into garbage time, dump-offs. That could happen too, though, so that could it kind of could go either way. You could see Seattle clamping down, or you could see him picking up garbage time stats. Crowell against Oakland. I know Oakland's given up a ton of points on the ground, but it's Cleveland, so I have trouble picking Cleveland. Brown is an awesome Antonio Brown's awesome against anyone. Robinson against the Patriots is a good pick this week. Cameron Jordan is injured last I heard, I mix the damn two up all the time. But I heard the tight end's injured, not sure if he's going to play. Kicker's good. Quinn has a good matchup on defensive line for Legion of Doom. Bradham and Worlow are good matchups. Worlow was injured last I saw, so I don't know if he's 100%. Talvin Smith has a great matchup. Smith is also a Hunter Smith, great defensive back to have. Bradham against Miami isn't bad. You move over to the Muskego Raiders, they have Big Ben taking on St. Louis. That's nice. Pittsburgh still is going to wing it. They might not get 30 points in this one, but they're going to wing it. Gore against Tennessee is gold this week. Mark it down. I think he's going to get at least a touchdown, possibly two. Same thing for Lynch against the Bears. 2 to 3 touchdowns for Lynch. DeAndre Hopkins has a great matchup against Tampa Bay. I heard he had a concussion, so I'm not sure if he's going to play or not. Keenan Allen against Minnesota is nice. Defensively, Dunlop should get his points. Mosley and Anthony, great linebacker matchups. Two teams that run the ball a lot. Rookie defensive back from Kansas City looks like the real deal. So paired with Iadigbo and Jimmy Smith, Mark has some really nice matchups there. It's close, but I'm going to take the Muskego Raiders to win this one. Legion of Doom has a rough few matchups this week, or else I would pick them. I do still like Legion of Doom to win it all. Over to the Renaissance Conference. I got about 3 minutes. Hopefully the show doesn't kick off. Red hot and undefeated Kenosha Commandos take on the Irishmen in a match that got a lot more interesting last Sunday when Kenosha lost their starting quarterback via the injury to Tony Romo. With Romo out, Bridgewater is going to start against San Diego for the Commandos. Fitz is going up. Damn it. There's 3 minutes left. Let me just stop the show, and I will go ahead and pick this up with probably a 10-minute, 15-minute show on the other half of this because I only have 3 minutes. I'm not going to get through this. It was close, but again, sorry, guys. We'll get this better off in the future. So right now I'm going to have to say this is the end of part one. Let's go ahead and crown them, damn it.
4 picks against Grossman and 2 fumbles. What do you see about the Bears? We shut them down that way.
The Bears are what we thought they were. What we thought they were. We played them in preseason. Who the hell takes a third game in a preseason like us? We played them in the third game. Everybody played 3 quarters. The Bears are who we thought they were. That's why we took the damn field. Now.
I love that. The Bears definitely are who we thought they were.